something we've known and we've talked about before, but it was nice to have that confirmed. There was, it also talked about how we can, in the future, better structure contracts and better structure our implementation approach so that we don't end up in a perpetual implementation cycle like we have this time. A lot of that, what happened this time, really was due to many reports to this. It was due to the fact that we were the biggest and one of the first to go to open road tolling. There was a lot to learn, but we've learned it now. So we can stand upon that and really move forward in a way that wasn't possible the first time around. And then finally, continual improvement. This talks about our existing system and the fact that since we do have to live with it for a little bit of time, what we can do in the interim to get the most out of it. So we'll talk about those in the continuing slides. That's just the context that this took place in. If we go to the next one, I also want to talk a little bit about what we've been doing to date and why that strategy was there. We had opted, you might recall about a year ago, to keep the existing vendor and to manage the existing system, even though we knew we'd have to move to a new one. Mm-hmm. We chose to do that because we felt there was a lot less risk in dealing with what we had while we look forward to a new one, instead of trying to switch too quickly or to switch to something in the interim and then switch immediately again. We recognized ourselves, without it in black and white, but this of course supports it, the limitations of the existing system to accommodate future tollway growth. And this plan was established for procuring and implementing a new system. We put into place a realistic time frame for evaluating, selecting, and implementing a new system. I know that it seems like a long time frame. I really do believe that in the world of technology best practices, that time frame is right in line with something for a system that complex and that important. And we committed to maximizing the existing system to enhance customer service in the interim. And that includes things like improving our address update, looking at the credit card account updaters so that people's credit cards don't get renewed in our system, leading them to have diminished accounts, things like that. So that's the context. And now we move on to the assessment results. There are several pages of these, and I'll walk you through them, and you can let me know if you have any questions. The first one here confirms what we have deeply suspected. It's that although we do collect almost all of the revenue due to us, the system architecture and performance of what we have now is inadequate to support continued growth and customer service improvement. This system was developed with a certain capacity in mind, and our IPAS program has exceeded that in a good way. Our IPAS program has been far more successful than we thought. The amount of data being processed and managed far exceeds anything we expected, and this system is literally bursting at the seams. There is not much else we can do to accommodate our evolving and new concerns and ideas and opportunities.
But wasn't it the original system anticipated like 60 or 70% IPAS, and we're in the high 80s at this point?
Yes. And
so it literally, if it was a bag, it would be popping at the seams.
Yes.
So that's kind of the problem that Carl and I and Mayor Pradel identified as our committee months ago. And how we get there is now the difficult problem. But it's a good problem because we're collecting more money and we're collecting it quickly.
There are things that we can do, though. The report does speak to this, and under the leadership of our CIO, Joe Kambich, we've already been doing this, and we're continuing to ramp it up. Things we can do to better manage what we have, the system that we have in place. So expanding our system documentation. We have documentation, but it is not as comprehensive as it needs to be for a system that is as important to our daily work. So we're working on that. Establishing better data management procedures and kind of documenting how those occur and who's doing them and the responsibility chain, things that have been managed more by our vendor than by us in the past, but that we're working to switch and make that change. Establishing a more robust test environment so that when we are making little tweaks to the existing system, we have a much better sense of what those tweaks might result in. Our existing test environment is okay, but it's not high end, and we can go to the high end if we work hard at it. Continuing to improve direct involvement with daily management. When we first got this existing system, as you might remember from the whole Trump contract, it was one giant contract, you know, laying through the back office, and we wanted the vendor to manage it. It was supposed to be kind of turnkey, but we have become far more sophisticated in the meantime, and our interests and our expectations around opportunities have grown. So we need to take more control of it, and we've been working to do so. And that's really what this part of the report speaks to. And then, obviously, that last bullet there.
Excuse me, Shauna, can you explain, give an example of that, the last point of...
Improving direct involvement with daily management.
Yeah, it's increasing...
There are certain reports, that, for instance, that have to be run every day, and right now the vendor runs them, and we actually aren't quite sure how to run them. We need to learn. We're putting the skill sets in place, we're putting the training in place, and we're going to start doing it ourselves so that that's something we can control.
Yep. So bringing more of the day-to-day management of the system and oversight and understanding in-house so that we're not as beholden to an outside vendor. This is a significant system for us, significant part of our revenue. We need to have the actual employees of the tollway that are very familiar and able to run it.
Well, even as minor as we brought back the review of the license plate images back into the state of Illinois with the not-for-profits, we got way too dependent on a vendor, and they're probably doing a good job. And actually, when we're committee met with them, the guy was very responsive and everything, but we probably had too many eggs in one basket, and it would be in our best interest to break it into parts to start with, but also to have people on this end who at least know why we're getting what we're getting and how we can get it if we need it. Because we spent months not able to get the information we needed to make decisions because we had to contact somebody at the vendor, and he said, well, you know, next week and whatever. So I think it'll be a parallel system in essence. They'll have the capability. Whoever the vendors have the capability, but we would have people here who have the same capability. So we're not so dependent on an outside vendor.
So, and the last part here is when you're working with a system that's bursting at the seams and you've reached the end of what it can really do, you've got to look to a new system. We knew this. It's now confirmed for us in an even more robust way. But that's how we would address the findings around this the system limitation. That takes us to the next slide, which talks about backlogs. You might remember this is the reason that we originally called for this assessment, was that Indiana backlog. We were worried. If there was one backlog, there must be others. What do they look like? What do they represent? And how do we deal with them? This, you'll see the backlogs exist, and then that phrase, and may continue. The next slide deals with the and may continue, so just put that on the back burner for a second. And let's talk about the existing. The first two bullets have an important differentiator there on the left-hand side. One of them deals with notices, and one of them deals with violation transactions. Notices are the pieces of paper people receive with multiple violation transactions on them. So that those things have been issued by mail, or should have been issued by mail. The violation transactions are things that we have the plate number, we know that it was a missed toll, but we've never gotten the address or the name of the person connected to that plate. So those are just individual transactions. First one there, notices as old as 2003, really the bulk of them are from the system that preceded this right system that we have now, represent about $1.8 million in tolls that are backlogged. And then just violation transaction, about $1.5 million from the last couple of years, because a violation transaction will age out of the system after 2 years per our business rules. So most of those are out of state, and most of those represent license plates that we have not been able to get the information on in the past, because as you all know, we haven't received all the state information in the past, but we're receiving more and more. And those are in there and ready to go once we get that other state information.
So I think it's an important distinction that this isn't, the second point is not, the majority of this is not so much a problem with our system per
Correct.
Se, it's that we now have access to new information and more information on out-of-state plates and being able to link those and get the registered owner information. That's just something that we...
I think we about 8 or 9 months ago approved approaching other states through some kind of consortium to get access, and that's starting to
to bear fruit?
Yeah, we've expanded, you know, our efforts, but we do have a third-party vendor that does
that's
do that
right.
on our
we
behalf.
Someone, yeah.
And there are more states coming online now that we're going to be able to follow up on.
The third item there on the left-hand side actually has to do with refunds and the possibility, and this isn't saying for certain because this is how uncertain the data in this particular area is, the possibility that there might be about $700,000 of refunds in the system. This system was not built to identify and address refunds. It's never been built to do that. I guess it wasn't anticipated at the time. It has always been the policy of the tollway to research and issue any refunds that come to our attention, usually through the phone call of a customer.
Through an overpayment, typically. So, you know, violation notices cross in the mail, somebody pays the first one, but they've already gotten a second one, they mistakenly pay the second one. We don't have an automated way of identifying those, dealing with that. And
we simply don't know until they contact us.
So, yeah.
Right.
The system does not flag these things. So if somebody receives the first notice and the second notice and they pay both by accident, if they know they pay both by accident, they call us, we can confirm that and issue a refund.
But we do that by hand, correct?
We do it by hand.
Yeah.
We do it manually.
Yes.
So those are the three major areas that we have in there. And we have some recommendations up here. The things you have on your screen, the previous page. What you have on your screen is a little different than what's up here. These two are reversed on your screen. So I'm just going to speak to the way they are up here. With respect to the notices stretching back to about 2003, the recommendation is to cleanse the system of this data, really to protect our customers. It's not that it's going to pop out and be issued, but when people call in to pay their violations and to and we look up their plates and their driver's license, these things do still show up, and there's no way to simply repress them. So people will be asked, and we're training the customer service reps, you know, not to ask about these super, super old ones now that we're learning about this, but people have learned about them through the course of regular customer service contact, and we want to protect customers from that sort of interaction, because it's shocking to learn of, you know, an old notice from 2003. The next one is we'd like to commence pursuing these violations from, I'm still on the thing.
Just stay on this slide until she tells you.
And if I were talented enough, I would click it myself. I know the last time I was up here, I completely failed at that.
You took the clicker away from you?
Yes.
I think
kind of like a Seinfeld episode.
right. The second bullet there on the right-hand side is the recommendation to commence pursuing these violations for the states that we now have data for. And yes, they go back a couple of years, but these are out-of-state violations that typically aren't as big as the ones that you would see for in-state people who are commuting all the time. And if we have their data now and we have the information sitting there, we'd like to release these to notices and work them through.
And isn't the recommendation, we're going to follow the same rule as we did in Indiana, two years, that's it. We're not
exactly.
going to go back 5 years or 6 years.
That's
but we're
right.
going to follow, which was also the Illinois rule several years ago.
But this wasn't, again, a situation where, you know, we had a system problem that created... We didn't have access to the right data.
Right.
So I agree that it's the responsible thing is to hold these individuals to the same rule and accountable to pay their way on our system.
And we think you'll see in parentheses there up to $1 million annually. These new states we think would represent that for us because that's the volume of drivers on average that we would get. Then finally, with respect to those potential overpayments that we would like to refund, we're recommending that we actually manually go through them, research each one, figure out if it's a real overpayment, because a lot of them are not. A lot of them are possible overpayments from people who owe us money elsewhere, so they would cancel each other out. But we'd like to research every one and then make that clean going forward.
And give back people their money.
Right.
Correct.
Do the right thing by our customers.
Do the right thing
by
our customers.
We really think that this is an opportunity for us to step in and, you know, not, again, tolerate some of these, you know, eight year-old, you know, notices popping up or issues that we're not sure how they were followed up on or what where they were in the process, which is kind of cleansing that backlog, fairly small backlog that still exists. But also, as you said, researching each of these potential refunds and just making sure that we're, you know, getting the money back to our customers if it's owed to them or reassigning it to some other debt that they may owe us. Or just taking care of it so we have a kind of a clean slate on it.
Do you have projected end dates for these three activities?
Well, I think those first two would take at least 6 months based on what we know about kind of the what it would take to get things through the full cycle. And we wouldn't put them all out on one day because then the customer service center would be slammed and we would just the customers wouldn't get the service they needed. So they'd have to go out in little bits and parcels so that people would be able to call in and work through them.
And the other one, the $700,000 by hand, that's kind of just as bodies are available, I think, isn't that the plan?
The manual process, we'll have to review to what extent we'd need additional resources to try to get through those quickly. $700,000 since 2004, you know, we want to make sure that we're dealing with it correctly, but it is over a long period of time. So there'll also be some issues of for the older ones, you know, to what extent we can even track down the individuals who may be owed some type of refund and what our process is.
And these refunds could be a dollar or two.
But it could be just a couple.
40 cents.
Yeah, it's 40 cents, 80 cents, a dollar. So it's not lots of money, but we just want to do right by people.
Absolutely.
So it'd be interesting to see if it's easier to find people you owe money to.
They might voluntarily come forward. Tomorrow morning we'll have 3 million phone calls. That's my 40 cents.
Right.
Every time we get a phone call like that, we research it. And if there's something there that can be documented, we do the refund. So I wanted to go to the next page here because that's the and may continue. These backlogs and may continue. The way our system is kind of bursting at the seams and the way its data is structured such that there are a number of subsystems that the data is always moving in between. This report told us that we can't confirm that these won't continue to occur from time to time. And if that's true, and if we have to live with this system for a few more years, then we need to do something to protect our customers. And we'd like to implement the 90-day rule that we've talked about, I think several times at least in the past, to eliminate this occurrence of kind of large notices of many violations going out whenever we have a backlog. So this 90-day rule would be, as we discussed in the past, the rule that a notice would have to be issued within 90 days of that third violation in the two-year period. And here you can see the complexity of our business rules because it's hard to even picture that. But you get two violations, and then on your third one, you get a notice. We're saying if that notice is not issued within 90 days, it will not be issued. And this will we need I think we had said like a couple of months by the end of the summer to get this program into place. But that's what we would like to do to protect our customers with our existing system.
And on that end, I think Mayor Pradel or Carl or I would like to make a motion. However we do it, just a will of the board that by August or September, whatever date Shauna thinks is right, because this was really the heart and soul of what we were involved with for a year. And there's something just not fair with sending a person a notice 23 months after the third violation when the first violation was 20 months earlier. And we had set this target. We did not think it was realistic. But Shauna now in the last 6 months has kind of gotten close to the 90 days. And so just so we could, I'm not sure how we do it legally, but say that at some point in time we'd like to implement this so that they have the power to say, you know what, we'll just have to forget that. But we need to give her the 60 or 90 days. But this is like a home run from where we were a year ago.
We'll be happy to prepare a resolution for the next meeting. It's not on today's agenda, but we can work with
you. And then you can work a date that is realistic. Mm-hmm.
And noting what I sense is broad support from the board, and I think that motion and that affirmation of it is very important. But we will begin work right away. We will not necessarily wait until the next board meeting to begin
right.
work toward this end, because it will be, you know, there will be a process of programming and implementing it, coding it into the system. But, you know, we agree that we're at the right point now where we think we can function at this level, and we owe it to our customers to not surprise them with things that are 4 or 5.
Yeah, well, maybe I'd like to make a motion to be seconded by Carl or by George that we direct the attorney to develop the proper documentation to implement a 90-day rule within this calendar year.
Again, we don't have this on the agenda, so the Open Meetings Act says don't do that. I will work.
Well, this is on the agenda.
I will take the I will take that, and we will prepare that for next month.
I want to thank the customer services working group. We really worked hard to
come up with it.
And to Shauna and the business system staff, because really what we're doing now is holding that staff accountable in a wholly different way. And you're taking responsibility for that to say within 90 days of this third notice, we're going to actually get it out and get the revenue the tolling is entitled to, but also in a way that the customers are going to know what this notice is, because it's not so old that they've forgotten that they even were driving on the tollway.
You've said it's a fairness issue.
Yes, really.
What kind of numbers are we talking about daily, in a day? How many people usually don't pay their...
How many people, I'm sorry?
Do not pay their toll, just must.
Oh, very few. I mean, 95% of our customers pay their toll easily, and then from a revenue perspective, we collect almost 100%.
But how many, like, is it 1,000 a day that might violate, or 1,000? It's
1.
Not. It could be 3 violations by one driver.
Yeah.
And if you look at the weekly report that we get, the dashboard, it does have the number of calls that have been received, the amount of money that's been collected.
Because I misunderstood when I got on the board that each violation was 3 different people, but if you're leaving from where I'm at, and you're going all the way to Springfield, or you're going into Indiana, you might miss 3 or 4 tolls on the way, and each of those counts, and that could be your 3 violations all in one day.
You know, I think, you know, the electronic tolling, I think, has been a very good thing for everybody. There's no question about it. I think it's very good for the customers. It's been good for the tollway. You can see that with the customers by the take rate. We have such
right.
a huge percentage already on board, and we were pioneers in a sense in electronic tolling. So therefore, when you're pioneers, you know, some of your systems aren't perfect, and we know that now. What I like about what I'm hearing today is not only that we're moving forward to develop, you know, to go out for a new system that I'm sure will be much more advanced, but that we're not waiting for that system to be implemented to try to correct some of the issues, the customer related issues. And be more fair toward our customers and make sure we're treating them properly. And I do think the customer service working group, you know, really did an excellent job in getting us to this point. But I also think staff is doing a great job, and I like the fact that we're not waiting to implement a new system to take care of some of these issues.
We appreciate
that. We appreciate the support. Well, this is great. I mean, on a very practical level. Because we were told, until we rebid and put a new system in, it's going to take 2 years. It's like, well, in the meantime, people are very frustrated. And the fact that we can kind of short-circuit that while we replace the system is a real good first step.
Yeah.
And gets us back to the bottom line is we get no tax money.
Yeah.
Our money comes from the people who use our system, and we're trying to treat them as if they're the most important people in the world to us, which they are, but as if we're a business that needs their business, not that they have no choice. And that focus is critical, and this really moves toward that, which is, we appreciate you, because I know this is taking a lot. It's not fun to evaluate yourself and then have to report to the bosses, but this is a good solution to get through the first phase.
Our final slide here is just a reminder about where we stand on that timeline. We've already started documenting all of our existing business rules and getting ready for the next phase of kind of what are requirements for a new system. We'll be working with Director Morris to kind of set the plan and agenda for this customer service committee so that we can continue on that path. And we'll spend a good portion of the next part of the summer on the RFI, and we'll be notifying you on how that continues. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Sean. I know that that was a, you know, many months of effort, and I do agree, and you know, send my thanks to you and your team, because I think our performance has greatly improved, and I think we can all have confidence that we've got a plan on how to go forward that's reasonable and responsible, I think. So, just a couple more quick updates from on my part. I've already heard, I think you've already heard a couple people comment. We had our first I-90 corridor planning council meeting earlier this month. It took place last Thursday, actually. It seems like a lifetime ago now, but it was actually only last Thursday that the first meeting was. And I think we made some tremendous progress. We, I think, got general consensus on some guiding principles for the work of that group. And I will just mention those briefly. First is to improve the performance of the I-90 corridor to support economic vitality across northern Illinois, thereby enhancing passenger, commuter, and freight mobility throughout the corridor. There was a lot of discussion about congestion and how important it was that we mitigate congestion or eliminate as much congestion as possible in the corridor. Require cooperative planning among agencies and municipalities to guide future investments along the I-90 in a transparent and accountable manner. 3, taken together, the tollway IDOT and CTA move more than 1 million people a day along the corridor. Collectively, we need to plan for current and future levels of congestion by improving the overall throughput of the corridor, by enhancing accessibility and providing choices. Future plans must take into account the broader impacts and benefits within the corridor. 4, minimize the environmental impacts of transportation infrastructure and operations and promote sustainable practices. 5, support financially viable solutions that protect the I-90 corridor and allow flexibility for future growth. And 6, maximize the use and extend the life cycle of the collective infrastructure assets along that corridor. So those were some guiding principles that I think we agreed on and did some work around at the last meeting. We will have future corridor planning meetings. We'll make all of you aware of those. Director Morris was able to attend. I think, again, we did some good work here. There is a working group, a more technical working group of the different transportation agencies who are currently focusing on some of the particulars on the Jane Addams First, and particularly around the, what transit element might be possible on that portion of the corridor. But I think that there was some discussion of expanding that technical group to include CTA and the City of Chicago's Department of Transportation, and even reaching out to some folks in Rockford so they could be aware of that effort, even though they might not be directly impacted by the first phase of that work. But we do need to plan for what and how what that transit is, how it interacts with the CTA Blue Line, for instance, or other transit components. Just make sure that we are thinking more broadly about what's possible on that corridor, and I think that we have some important partners in that. So the next corridor planning council meeting will actually be July 13th. I can't remember what time. Do we?
Still working on it.
We might still be working on the time,
so
we'll get back to you. So, but that was a great, I think.
Yeah, there was. What's kind of exciting about this is because it might take a long time for the Star Line, which is the train in that, people said, well, what about bus on shoulder? What about parking lots so people can park and commute and stuff? So this group was really kind of open to a lot of good ideas, to give us some ideas. And a fellow from the City of Chicago, I think, always had another thing, is that we have to be careful both with what we do and IDOT does, that we don't do something that pushes people onto the side streets and creates congestion within a 2 or 1 or 2 mile area. As Mayor Pradel knows, that up here at one of the intersections in Naperville, you know, until the new Aurora interchange opened up, you had people sneaking off and going through. So it was kind of interesting that people are talking in terms of the 2 or 3 miles on either side to make the whole transit system work, and that's really kind of moving us into the real future where we should be. So it's a good group you put together.
Right, I think it will be a very positive effort, and I think that these, you know, bringing all of these stakeholder groups to the table on these important projects on the front end, so that we, again, don't have unnecessary, you know, delays or disagreement on the back end as we're trying to implement something that may not be a consensus, is I think the right approach. And certainly all of you have been very clear about that point from the get-go, so we think it's an important effort. Also, a quick update on the Elgin O'Hare West Bypass Advisory Council. As you remember, last fall, the governor convened this advisory council, co-chaired by myself and Secretary Gary Hannig, on the Elgin O'Hare. That advisory council held its last official meeting earlier this week. They voted on approval of their recommendations to be forwarded on to the co-chairs, Gary Hannig and myself, and we will, of course, relay those to the governor. He should be receiving that final report. It will be sent to the governor and Governor Quinn this week. Some very exciting work from that group. As you recall, that group broke into subgroups as well to facilitate their work, and we had a diversity subgroup, sustainability subgroup, economic development working group, and then a financing working group. And I think there was some tremendous progress made made in all of those, and that report is available and will be available for everybody this week. Although it was the last full council meeting, the financing working group does have some unfinished business. They decided, so on their own, they decided that they want to continue to do some work around developing some additional ideas for how to pay for the project. I think they got to consensus on some portions of a plan, but there may still be more work to do. So they on their own have decided many of those local elected officials and members of the financing committee may be continuing to meet, and we just pledged that both IDOT and the TOLA would be available to help, you know, support their efforts as they continue to think through other creative alternatives to help fund that project. And by and large, there was certainly unanimous support for tolling the Elgin O'Hare. I think there was a recognition that tolls and collecting tolls on that infrastructure was really one of the only ways that that project was going to be able to move forward. And while there's, again, still much work to be done, I think that discussion was very, very helpful and fruitful in the process. While it was an eight-month process, and certainly was sometimes some very interesting discussions trying to reach consensus, I think that advisory council came back with some very positive findings and recommendations. So we'll certainly distribute that. I know that we've tried to keep you up to date and have distributed draft findings, but we'll distribute that full report. And some members of that advisory council have asked if they could come and brief the board on their work, our board on their work. So we'll be trying to accommodate that also at a future board meeting. So I think that's everything. We already talked about the research symposium, which I know, unfortunately, well, I shouldn't say unfortunately, I was happy to be previously engaged on the day that that was happening, but I know that went on without me, and it sounded like it was a great success, so I was happy to hear about that, too, on my return. So
I want to thank Christy and Paul and Rocco and the rest of the staff who have worked on these corridor projects. This is not easy work. It takes a lot of staff work, not just the mechanics of the meetings, but making sure that everybody has the right material to understand what the issues are and be able to make reasoned judgments. And as Christy says, it is the right way to proceed. It is involving the people whose lives are going to be impacted by these projects at the front end, just the way we want to put together this planning and strategy committee that Director Wisner will be chairing. It's a way of making sure that we know and that they know what the implications of these decisions are. So on both the Elgin O'Hare, the I-90, and now the 53 Blue Ribbon Committee, it does take an enormous amount of work. So we thank you for your patience and for involving the right people who are going to be interested in this, and then having public discussions. All these meetings are public, and people can come and talk about their concerns, and we get that, as Christy says, on the front end so that we're making more informed decisions. And I think we've learned a lot. And certainly in the financing subcommittee of the Elgin O'Hare, I think it's taken a lot of effort and a lot of good work on the part of the people who are staffing it, but I think we've got more options now than we did when we started, and I think everybody involved in the process has a better understanding. I think the first meeting Christy and I went to, the people who have been in support of this basically were saying, well, the tollway's going to pay for this, right? And we said, well, if the tollway's paying for it, that means somebody's putting money in a box or through a transponder, and so let's think about what the implications of that are and how much it would cost if we were just tolling people on this one segment of the system in order to support this segment of the system. It's just people simply didn't understand some of the analysis behind it. So I think these meetings have been extremely important and will continue to be, and I think having the information available publicly for people, and I assume we'll be able to post these recommendations on our website, and we compliment the governor for having set up this Elgin O'Hare work group that really set the model for how we would go forward. So any questions on that, or any other questions for Christy? Okay, so let's turn to the consent agenda. I think there were at least four items, but correct me as I go through this, which are going to be different when we vote on them from the way they were on the original public posting, and I'm going to try to point those out. The first is in the finance section. The original public posting was for $29,843.05. What we're voting on is $21,914.67. There have also in the finance section been two items that have been deferred. The fifth one, which was contract 11003, and the second one, which is contract 090109. So the last two items on the originally posted procurement section have also been pulled. This would be then to take the consent agenda from the Finance Committee. So may I hear a motion first?
Motion over here.
Okay, second. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, business systems, there's one item there.
Motion approved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, thank you. Procurement 1-4.
Motion approved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
And operations, we'll take just that, the two items.
Motion approved.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Engineering, the first item that was posted, contract RR115625, is not going to be voted on, so we'll take only the second one.
Motion to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Thank you. And on legal, we have four items. The fourth item we discussed in executive session, which is a personnel matter and a litigation settlement, and the board has recommended the $39,361 settlement. It was originally posted, I believe, at $3,900. May I hear a motion on those four?
So moved. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Thank you. Did we get them all, Trees? Okay, great. Unfinished business? Any new business? This may be an all-time world record. We will finish by 11:30. It means that Christy's not here. We just are very expeditious when she's on vacation.
Good to know. I'll have to take honeymoon.
No. This is a great agenda.
I think it's a reflection also on how the committees have become more and more effective, too, because beforehand, the people who weren't here earlier, we spent a couple hours, hour and a half, going through these meetings.
So I think we're all learning. May I hear a motion for adjournment?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, thank you. Our meeting is July 28th.
Correct.
Our next board meeting.
Is that different meeting.
No, it's where it's always been, but since we've shifted some of them around, I want to make sure. Thank you all. Have a nice summer.
Thank you.